Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are, our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing. And the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist. And her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, a story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up for this week. Now, this week, it's going to be, this show is going to be part two of this, I guess it's a series where we're starting a new series. It looks like we're doing nothing but series on this show, but we're not. This is actually a special edition of Throttle Up, and it has to do with had been billed as a debate of the century. It's a debate between Jordan Peterson and Slavoj Zizek. The title of the debate was Happiness, Capitalism versus Marxism. And so this is going to be the second show that's going to talk about that. So I guess we call it a special edition, part two of this debate of the century between these two towering figures. Now, Jordan Peterson, of course, is very well known in this country and, of course, throughout the world. He's been doing a lot of work internationally to sold-out crowds. He's very popular, growing in popularity. He's one of the most popular figures right now, as far as I can tell, in media today. And as you would expect, he has, you know, he's gotten his share of criticism. Frankly, I think most of it's unfounded. He's particularly important and is many, many people find his message to be attractive and compelling and useful in their lives. And so he's kind of he has come on the world stage more or less abruptly, and he has articulated what you would consider to be a rather fresh new message, a set of ideas that are not a rehash of other ideas. His ideas are fresh and new and compelling. He is not at all a boring speaker. It's a very engaging speaker. He does a great job in public arenas and public settings. He's a great public speaker, and he also is engaging, and he talks in a way that is, you know, that it's attractive. He doesn't put people off. He's not overly verbose or pedantic, but very accessible. His message is, you know, very accessible. It's not hard to understand. And what is his message? A good question. You know, we've talked about that in previous shows. But we're going to be talking mostly about his debate and his first 30 minutes. He was the first. He was the lead-off debater in this debate. For those of you who have listened to a previous Throttle Up last week, you know, realizes this. So I guess I'm repeating myself a little bit, but so he was the lead-off debater, and he spent so each one had 30 minutes to discuss, and then they have 10-minute rebuttal, and then of course Q&A at the end. And we're going to still focus on Jordan Peterson's first 30 minutes. Last week we didn't really have enough time to cover it all, but this week, that's a good question. I don't know if we're going to have to, I kind of think not. I think we'll probably have to carry this over to at least one more week. But we'll see how it goes, and we try to do things. You know, we try not to be too rigid here. You know, we're more or less we use a conversational style, and you know, and sometimes we happen to want to address a particular point of view or a particular issue a bit more. So we're not really tied down to a tight schedule like a lot of shows. So I guess you could say we're more free here. We're certainly have enough freedom to innovate and be creative and to be to present things in hopefully in an interesting way. Okay, so we're going to play a clip here shortly. And the clip is only a few minutes long, but it is going to really set the stage for our discussion. Last week, we also had a clip, audio clip of Jordan Peterson. We're going to do the same thing this week, assuming we can get our audio equipment working properly. Hopefully we can. And but before we do that, you know, we did touch on something else, a related public speaker, a related author, a related individual who has received a certain amount of notoriety in his life and the works. And this gentleman is Don Miguel Ruiz. He happens to be also, in addition to a shaman and a practitioner of the Toltec wisdom, he also happens to be a medical doctor. And so he has a book. Now I'm going to be reading from his book. It's called The Fifth Agreement. It's a practical guide to self-mastery, a Toltec wisdom book. And it's by Don Miguel Ruiz. Okay, so why do we want to bring this into the discussion with Jordan Peterson? Well, it's particularly important because Jordan Peterson, you know, last week, he starts his discussion in this debate. He starts his discussion by saying, well, he was going to go all the way back to the source document that basically started this whole, ongoing series of arguments between the viability of capitalism versus the supposed viability of Marxism or communism. And, you know, we're going to use those terms interchangeably. I know they're not exactly the same, but they're close enough for our purposes here. And so we can say the initiating document that brought about worldwide recognition of communism was the Communist Manifesto. And so Jordan Peterson has spent a great deal of time studying such a document. And so he goes through his list of issues, a list of concerns that he has with respect to the Communist Manifesto. But he raises a couple of really interesting things that we really need to spend a little bit more time on. And one of the things he talked about was that as we go through life, one of the things that we want to be able to do is to approach life with a healthy bit of skepticism. So when we encounter ideas, whether it's our own ideas or the ideas of others, a healthy bit of skepticism is particularly important. Now, the Fifth Agreement, and this is the name of the book in the Fifth Agreement in this book by Don Miguel Ruiz, is The Power of Doubt. And the Fifth Agreement says to be skeptical, but learn to listen. Be skeptical, all right? And so if you understand that, and so follow, we're going to follow a short excerpt from this particular book, happens to be starting on page 110. If you have your own copy, by the way, and I would recommend it, I think it's a great book. It's also something that you could use in your meditation or mindfulness exercises that you might do as we, you know, as we progress in our lives and on our understanding of our consciousness. One of the best books I've come across recently is The Morning Mind by Dr. Rob Carter. The Morning Mind, I would recommend that also. And that's part of this whole idea of mindfulness, which is becoming quite popular. And so the way you start your day is to have a quiet time where you think and where you gather your thoughts and where you consider things in a relaxed, non-stressful, pleasant environment. Surround yourself with soft, pleasant music. It could be outdoors somewhere. I like to do my morning mindfulness episodes outdoors somewhere. Could be on my back porch, typically, but it may be in other places. Whatever you find to be a pleasant and enjoyable and quiet, peaceful setting. Okay, so now when we talk about that, one of the things we need to understand is that and of course, the whole idea behind this show, the whole idea behind critical thinking is to consider how we go about thinking. What is it about the things we think about that we ought to understand from a thinking perspective? So we want to be able to think about what we're going to do, and we want to be able to think about how we should think. So the big question is, how should we think about certain things? And here, we're going to make it a little bit more specific. We're going to say, how should we think about communism versus capitalism? How should we think about such a thing? And one of the ways that we can do that, of course, is we can apply a lot of the principles of critical thinking, which we have talked about on the show quite extensively. But here's an additional area, a complementary area to critical thinking that we should consider. So I'm going to read some of this to you by Dr. Ruiz. If you understand the Fifth Agreement, he says, you will see the reasons why you don't need to believe what you can see. You already know it without words. The truth doesn't come with words. The truth is silent. It's something that you just know. It's something that you could feel without words. It's called silent knowledge. Silent knowledge is what you know before you invest your faith in symbols. When you open yourself to the truth and learn to listen, then all the symbols lose their value, and the only thing that remains is the truth. What I'm sharing with you isn't easy to understand, and he goes on to say, and at the same time, it's so simple that it's obvious. In the end, you are going to realize that languages are symbols that are only true because you think they are. And if you put them aside, what remains? What remains here is the truth. Okay, so what is, I guess, the way I understand it, you know, and some of this is a little bit esoteric, of course, and that's not a criticism. But the way I understand it is that if we're looking to validate something, or if we're looking to find the truth of the matter, what is the truth of the matter, or what exactly is reality? As Ayn Rand would say, reality is an objective fact. And so to be objective, or objectivity, to be an objective thinker here is crucial. So, and that's all part of this whole idea of critical thinking. So we're going to establish a way that we consider things, or the way that we think about things. And the way we go about thinking about things is probably more important than the thing itself. So here we go. So we're going to play this clip. And just to set up this this whole debate, there are about 10 things that Jordan Peterson picks out of the Communist Manifesto. And he talks about it in terms of, well, basically, as we discovered last week, he talks about it in terms of critical thinking. How should we think about such a thing? How should we consider such a thing? And so he picks out 10 ideas that he is considering. And briefly, they're this. And I have now written them down, and I want to talk about them. But the other thing that probably is a good idea is to take a look at some of the, you know, some of the information that you can pull up off the internet in terms of this particular document called the Communist Manifesto. And I guess that's what Jordan Peterson has done. And of course, you know, and of course, that's always useful. Now, the 10 ideas that Jordan Peterson discusses with respect to the Communist Manifesto, or another way of saying that is respect to Marxism, is these. The first one is history. So the Communist Manifesto discusses history in terms of class struggle and hierarchies. The second one is the binary class struggle in particular, and that has to do with the exploited and the exploiters, or the oppressor class and those that who are oppressed. The third thing is good versus evil, and that's a particularly important subject to talk about, because when we're talking about good, we're also talking about virtue, we're talking about morality, we're talking about Judeo-Christian values in a sense, although I don't think that Marxism had anything to do with that necessarily. But you can see that they bring into this argument this thing called good versus evil. The next one is the dictatorship of the proletariat, which was being proposed. The fifth one is profit, a profit motive. What is profit? Sixth one is productivity. The seventh one is hyper productivity leading toward utopia. The eighth one is indolence. The ninth one is a system of production. And the third, and the last one, the tenth one, is narcissistic thinkers with respect to Marx and Engels. Okay, so we're going to be talking about that in some measure of detail, but I do want to start off we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to set up our audio equipment, and then we're going to be doing a short audio clip of this Jordan Peterson during this, it's called the Debate of the Century. So we will be right back. Hey, welcome back to Throttle Up. Now, in this section, we're gonna play a short audio clip of the Jordan Peterson discussion on this debate of the century. It's about happiness, capitalism versus Marxism. Now, this is and you'll have to bear with me audio-wise, but I think we can pull this thing off. This is about 2 minutes and 43 seconds, and it has to do with the last issue, if you will, that Jordan Peterson has with respect to this Communist Manifesto. Now, we're gonna do this because I think what he's doing, he's kind of summarizing his thinking here. He's setting the stage for us to consider this thing from a critical thinking perspective, and I think it's particularly good that we hear this in his own voice, and to try to understand it with respect to this issue before us as we go forward. So here goes this audio clip.
So, and then the last error, let's say, although by no means the last, was this, and this is one of the strangest parts of the Communist Manifesto, was Marx admits, and Engels admit repeatedly in the Communist Manifesto, that there has never been a system of production in the history of the world that was as effective at producing material commodities in excess than capitalism. Like, that's extensively documented in the Communist Manifesto. And so if your proposition is, look, we got to get as much material security for everyone as possible, as fast as we can, and capitalism already seems to be doing that at a rate that's unparalleled in human history, wouldn't the logical thing be just to let the damn system play itself out? I mean, unless you're assuming that the evil capitalists are just going to take all of the flat-screen televisions and put them in one big room and not let anyone else have one, the logical assumption is that, well, you're already on a road that's supposed to produce the proper material productivity. And so, well, that's 10 reasons, as far as I can tell, that. And so what I saw in that the Communist Manifesto is like seriously flawed in virtually every way it could possibly be flawed, and also all evidence that Marx was the kind of narcissistic thinker who could think. He was a very intelligent person, and so was Engels. But what he thought when he thought was that what he thought was correct. And he never went the second stage, which is, well, wait a second, how could all of this go terribly wrong? And if you're a thinker, especially a sociological thinker, especially a thinker on the broad scale, a social scientist, for example, one of your moral obligations is to think, you know, you might be wrong about one of your fundamental axioms, or two, or three, or ten, and as a consequence, you have the moral obligation to walk through the damn system and think, well, what if I'm completely wrong here and things invert and go exactly the wrong way? And like, I just can't understand how anybody could come up with an idea like the dictatorship of the proletariat, especially after advocating its implementation with violent means, which is a direct part of the Communist Manifesto, and actually think, if they were thinking, if they knew anything about human beings and the proclivity for malevolence that's part and parcel of the individual human being, that could do anything but lead to a special form of hell, which is precisely what did happen.
Okay, so that's the clip that I wanted to play, and it's kind of setting the stage for our ongoing discussions here. Which is, and it's, you know, Jordan Peterson said it very well. What if it doesn't go well? What if something goes seriously wrong? What do we do? Are there any corrective mechanisms? Is this system of thought that we're putting together, that we're knitting together with respect to this Communist Manifesto, does it have any flexibility? Is it flexible? Is it adaptive? Can we make adjustments along the way? Or is it a very rigid ideology? So rigidity or non-adaptability. You know, and that's one of the things that, of course, is motivated my life for a very long period of time in terms of my professional career and my writing career, and that is, do we build adaptive systems? Can we be adaptive? Can we be agile and adaptive in the way we go about our lives, the way we pursue our career is our system of thought agile and adaptive? Can we make adjustments along the way? Can we respond to events? Are we event responsive? We will encounter events because the unpredictability of life, if you will, the unpredictability of business, the unpredictability certainly of military operations. And can we make those adjustments? Can we make those necessary improvements, if you will, or can we change course quickly? Are we agile and adaptive in our ability to respond to changing operational conditions? In other words, put it very simply, are we responsive? And so Jordan Peterson talks about that, and he talks about the fact that, well, this system of thought, which we have called communism or Marxism, is in fact not adaptive in any way, shape, or form. And that's one of its, and we could say objectively, without using any ideology whatsoever, or without invoking any kind of political aspects of our argument, we can say that communism, as expressed in the Communist Manifesto, is seriously flawed because it is not adaptable. It cannot adapt, and it cannot find ways to correct for something that may very well not go well or may very well go seriously wrong. And we have seen that. In fact, there's a classic case in China under Mao, Chairman Mao, where communism went disastrously wrong. 10 million people died of starvation. And the response from the Communist Central Committee was ho-hum. I guess we did something, but that's just the breaks. So communism is not adaptable. It is a rigid, rather brutal system of thought. Okay, so that's a good starting point for our discussion of this this document, or as Jordan Peterson lays it out, the 10 points that he wants to talk about with respect to the Communist Manifesto. So we're going to go from the beginning again, and I know we're going to be repeating ourselves slightly as we go through this thing, but we're going to start off with number one and progress on to the 10. Jordan Peterson calls them the 10 fundamental axioms that are presented or articulated in the Communist Manifesto. The first one is history, the history of humanity, if you will, or the history of the human race, or human history. And the Communist Manifesto asserts at the very, very beginning that that human history consists of economic class struggle. And the class struggle has to do with those that have something and those that don't have something. Or they quickly go to some words which they call the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. The bourgeoisie happens to be the people who own the means of production. It could be the landowners, it could be ownership of whatever. And the proletariat is literally means those without, or those without ownership. So you have the owners and all those who don't own but work for the owners. Okay, so you could say that, you know, in a sense, we're talking about the slaves and the masters, if you will, or the slave class versus the master class. But in modern economic terms, they don't use those terms anymore. They use the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. All right, so class struggle. Class struggle, and Jordan Peterson talks about that and discusses the fact that, okay, well, there are hierarchies that exist in the animal kingdom as well as in human history. And the animal kingdom, Jordan Peterson, is embracing humanity as well. Okay, there are class struggles. There are hierarchies, rather. But the hierarchies are not politically based. The hierarchies are, in fact, biologically determined. All organisms organize themselves, and humans organize themselves, as well as almost all other groups organize themselves in some form or fashion. And this organization is not always bad. Many times it's good. Humans have to organize themselves in some way, typically, in order to survive. And so you can see this across all of human history. There are certain ways that humans have organized themselves. Of course, the big question here is, how should humans organize themselves? How should we organize ourselves with respect to some governing body or some superordinate hierarchical structure? How should humans organize themselves? And so that's a great question, but the organization is not necessarily good or bad. It's not, we don't attribute it to a particular value immediately. We recognize the inevitability of organization. Humans will organize themselves. That's inevitable. How they do so is dependent upon the circumstances that they find themselves in, and what seems to be useful over the long term, what has proven to be a viable form of organization. We can look at the, for example, there's some rather fascinating anthropological discussions concerning the Eskimos in North America and how they organized themselves, how they went about it, what was the reason for the particular organization. The differences between the coastal Eskimos and the inland Eskimos, which were also called the Inuits. And so how do these Aboriginal tribes organize themselves for what purpose? And now, a lot of that happened to be environmentally imposed necessities for organization. So there was a great deal of environmental conditions that had to be overcome because life in at those northern latitudes was very challenging, and so there was a lot of adverse conditions that had to be dealt with in order for humans to survive. So Jordan Peterson looks at history primarily through the perspective or through the lens of, what does it take for humans to survive? Not what is greedy or what is politically expedient, but what does it take for humans to survive? And there has to be some type of organization that has proven to be beneficial across time and space. And so hierarchical organizations, or the way humans have organized themselves in some kind of form or fashion, typically is because it was necessary and it had proven value. Obviously, if a particular group of people, let's say in ancient history, if a typical group of Aboriginal people organize themselves poorly, they would probably cease to exist over the span of a couple of generations. And so what proved to be viable in terms of human organization, if we study North American Indians, there's extensive literature that we can go to, places where we can study. I've done the same thing. We can see that most tribes and nations of the North American Indians, most of those were viably organized. They were organized in a viable way to the extent that they could be. Of course, a lot of them were warring tribes, but nevertheless, they found ways that they could deal with the natural world, deal with survival aspects of living, survive over long periods of time as a particular group of people. Right. So history is not class struggle. That's what Jordan Peterson is saying. Marx and Engels in the Communist Manifesto is saying that history is in fact based upon class struggle. And Jordan Peterson claims that that's entirely wrong. I would agree with that, but I would go a bit further. I would say that this kind of is a setup. You know, what they're doing is they're trying to set up their argument in favor of a violent overthrow of the existing order. Now, the Communist Manifesto is a call to arms, basically. All right, it's not just a political document. It's a call for revolution. It's a call to arms for those revolutionaries who want to overturn capitalism, to want to impose a new form of government, to create a new form of humans, and to confiscate the wealth that already exists in the world. Okay, so wealth confiscation and redistribution is the hallmark of the communist movement. And that is the prime motivator. And so they're trying to set up this argument to give them justification for what they want to do. And so they're using history. So they're distorting history in effect. All right. And this is nothing new. They didn't invent this this dysfunctional way of thinking, but they are distorting history, and they want to impose their value system on humanity, and they want to convince ourselves that it is justifiable to confiscate the property and the wealth of other people, or the wealth of those people that already have it. All right, so we'll take a short break, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. Now, this is a special edition, of course, and we are talking about, for the second week in a row, we're talking about this, what we call the debate of the century. It's a debate between Jordan Peterson and Slavoj Zizek. And the title of the debate is Happiness, Capitalism versus Marxism. So Jordan Peterson is a proponent of capitalism, and we're going to be talking about his arguments that he puts forward. But he is arguing here with respect to the Communist Manifesto, and he's looking at the Communist Manifesto from a critical thinking standpoint. He's coming up with a lot of problems with this document, conceptually, philosophically, organizationally, and critically. And we talked about history. Item number two is that the Communist Manifesto talks about the binary class struggle. It's it's a struggle between two and only two classes. So the binary class. Now, where they came up with this, or where the Marx and Engels came up with this, I'm not exactly sure, but that's how they characterize human existence, is consisting of a class struggle, but there's only two classes. There's the bourgeoisie, who are the owners, and then there's proletariat, those who don't own. And so class struggle, or binary class struggle, and Jordan Peterson talks about, okay, well, that's not all there is. There's lots of different classes and different variations of classes. And so he talks about how this thing basically totally fell apart in the first place that it was tried at the national level, and that is in Russia. That began in 1917 with the Communist Revolution, and they quickly installed communism and began to implement it. And in the process of doing so, they confronted, if you will, the formerly peasant class. Now, the peasants had recently emerged from their situation, and over a period of 40 or 50 years, some of them happened to accumulate a certain amount of property, a certain amount of wealth. Those that did well, that were very ambitious, industrious, those seem to have accumulated a certain amount of what we would call material wealth, or and achieved a certain level of well-being. And so that was the first group that the communists went after. They went after the former peasant class. And as it turns out, there was there happened to be about 1.6 million of those people that seemed to do, that had done pretty well materially. 1.6, and those within that group, all of them, all their wealth was confiscated, and they were sent off to Siberia, and 400,000 of them perished. So 400,000 of them were killed. The rest of them were reduced to stark poverty, to live out the rest of their lives in stark poverty without any of the possessions that they had accumulated or that their forefathers had accumulated. And so it was a brutal, brutal, brutal time for humanity. And in the process, Jordan Peterson says that millions were killed. But actually, the numbers are rather staggering. 6 million in this particular case, 6 million people killed. All right, so binary class struggle. Peterson says that's a preposterous idea, and it doesn't even pass any, even a casual observation of, is this true? Is this reality? Is this exactly or actually what has been going on? What happens? No, it turns out not to be true at all. But it's a convenient fiction, and that's something that supports this whole idea of communism. The third item, or the third axiom that Jordan Peterson talks about, is good versus evil. Now, this is particularly interesting. It's kind of a fascinating aspect of this debate. It's a very disturbing aspect of communism and the Communist Manifesto, because the Communist Manifesto brings in this whole idea of what we would call goodness or virtue versus immorality, or good versus evil, or however you want to describe it. They bring that into the argument, and their argument is that you are evil if you have exploited others, and to the extent that you have exploited others, then you have accumulated a certain amount of wealth. Now, stay with me here, because this is a really interesting way that they think. It is bizarre, it's convoluted, but this is exactly the mind space that exists within the mind of these proponents of communism. And it goes like this. If you have material wealth, if you have achieved somehow material well-being, you must have gotten that through nefarious means. Specifically, you must have achieved that through greed and exploitation. Therefore, your material wealth, however you think you got it, has been ill-gotten, and it needs to be confiscated from you, because to the extent that you have it, it proves that you are an exploiter and that you are greedy. In other words, you lack virtue. And because you lack virtue, and because your wealth has been ill-gotten or misbegotten, therefore it is legitimate for us, or we communists, to confiscate that wealth and give it to others. Okay, so that's this whole notion of good versus evil that is laid out in the Communist Manifesto. And that's what Jordan Peterson is not only criticizing, but he's condemning that point of view. He calls it dangerously wrong. He calls it completely preposterous. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. It is a very, very scary way to think about others, particularly others who happen to have achieved a certain standard of living or live a certain lifestyle that we would consider to be beneficial or desirable. It's a very, very scary way to look at, particularly recognizing the fact that we're dealing with the producers. We're dealing with people that actually are productive. And by being productive, they have accumulated resources that might be in excess of their immediate needs, but of course they're putting away for future times and for their progeny and so forth and so on. And so accumulating a certain amount of wealth is beneficial over the long term, because it might be able to handle ourselves or handle themselves during times of famine or times of catastrophe or whatever. And so they're preparing for the future, and they're being condemned for it. They're being condemned for the fact that they are prosperous. So prosperity in the minds of the communist is something to avoid at all cost. And if you are prosperous, we're going to take most of that prosperity away from you and give it to others. So that's the mindset. Okay, so I can see that we are about at the end of another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. By the way, our shows can be found in podcast form on our website, throttleupradio.com, or on iTunes. iTunes carries Throttle Up Radio, and so you can just find it on iTunes, and I would encourage all of you to do so. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.